Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome to the conclusion of this saga. If for some reason you have not heard the first part, we invite you to listen to it first so you understand the terrible events we are about to recount. My name is Uriel Reyes, and you are entering another installment of Tales of the Night. It was raining that night. I looked out the window, but I couldn't see anything more than that rain falling, lit up by the corner lamppost. The storm made the street look peaceful, ironically. The lowlifes who inhabited it at those hours had taken shelter somewhere nearby, but they would come back any minute. They always did. I scanned the street, and a figure caught my attention. Under another lamppost, there was a figure in white. It remained motionless. At first, I thought it was a trash can or something, but I wiped the window with my hand. Then it was clear. It was a person. I couldn't make out their face at that distance, or if it was a man or woman. I only noticed it was a person, looking in our direction, towards our building. But it wasn't strange for people with mental problems and things like that to roam that area. It was 20 minutes to midnight. My mom will be here soon, I thought. I hurried to bed and pretended to be asleep. Mom arrived. She sat down on my bed and I felt her hand on my shoulder.
I know you're awake. You always are. I'm going to tell you a story before your dad gets here,
she continued.
I don't know if my stories really put you to sleep or if you pretend so much you end up convincing yourself that you are. But do you know why they don't let you go up to the fifth floor? Everyone is afraid of the cannibal's apartment. But do you know why? Many things are said about the man who lived there for so long. That he was a murderer. That he had been in jail his whole life. That they let him out when he got old because he could no longer hurt anyone. And that he ended up there, in that apartment.
The neighbors below him complained that they could hear furniture being dragged back and forth all night and stomping all day. Neighbors on either side said they overheard strange voices, laughter, cackles, crying, voices whispering every time someone walked past, as if they were watching from behind the door. Everything got worse when new people moved in. Whatever was in there seemed to focus on the new tenants, and the change was evident in the people after just a few days of moving in. People with absent stares, people without light, without peace. That's why no one lasted long there, only him. Only he managed to stay there for several years. The cannibal. A few days after arriving at that apartment, the old man stopped going out. He would only leave once a week, very late at night. Contrary to what had happened to previous tenants of that apartment, he was still there a few weeks later, and those terrifying noises that had frightened the neighbors started up again. Among the laughter, his could now be heard as well. Among the crying, his crying could be heard too. Now, there weren't just mocking chuckles and murmurs when the hallway was empty and someone walked by. Now the old man could be seen peeking out through that small crack in the door. The last apartment on the fifth floor was home to one of the delinquents, who was always loitering by the entrance, looking to convince anyone to indulge in his vices. He claimed he wasn't scared of the cannibal. Warning of the things he would do if the cannibal even thought about messing with him. One early morning, as he passed the cannibal's apartment and noticed the door was ajar.
"What are you looking at? What do you want?"
he shouted, but then he realized it wasn't the old man behind the door. In the darkness, he was able to make out a woman wearing a long black dress with large shoulder pads. She had her mouth open and her eyes reflected the light from the hallway in a very strange way. Those were the only features he was able to identify before the figure hid behind the door. The guy ran down the stairs and whistled to his buddies who were still at the entrance. They came running up, ready to teach the old man and whoever else was inside a lesson. They kicked down the door and shouted for whoever was inside to come out. Moments later, the cannibal came out of the bedroom, wearing only pajama pants. It was clear he had just woken up, but there was something about him that made him look very threatening. Something beyond just looking stronger than they expected someone his age to be. They caught a glimpse into the bedroom, empty, no furniture. There was no one else there. The old man's eyes seemed to be completely black, so the guys left and didn't mess with him again. The cannibal's door began opening more often after that night, but it was no longer the cannibal peeking out from it. When someone arrived at night and saw the door ajar, they knew better than to walk past it. They would leave and kill some time and try again later.
That's when it happened. That thing that made all the families with children leave this building and made you the youngest tenant here. Do you remember? No, I guess you were too little. Camilo, a boy from the second floor, used to run errands for the building's residents. He would run to the store to buy things for them, in exchange for some change. He was very little, only 9 years old.
One evening, a neighbor from the fifth floor needed some groceries, but didn't want to go out. Precisely because it was one of those days when the cannibal's door was open. She decided to ask Camilo to go to the corner store for her.
"Have them added to my tab," she told him. "I'll come by to pay this afternoon."
Camilo went running off and was back in a few minutes, jumping up the stairs three at a time to get to that fifth floor. Before getting there, he ran into one of the other neighbors, who was about to open the stairwell door. He scared her so badly, she yelled at him to be more careful when going up the stairs. She watched in shock as the little boy ran down the fifth floor hallway, but as he passed the cannibal's opened door, a figure emerged from inside. A figure in a black dress with shoulder pads that had no visible face. It came out with arms extended and grabbed the poor boy, like an animal, pulling him into the cannibal's place in mere seconds. The neighbor screamed, alerting everyone. She knocked on all the apartment doors.
"It took him! It took him!"
she yelled. Camilo's mom raced upstairs. The neighbors were all kicking the door, but something was holding it shut from the inside. Camilo was crying for help. After several minutes of pounding on the door, it suddenly opened. The cannibal looked surprised at all the people gathered outside his apartment. They rained blows on him as Camilo's mom pushed inside to look for her son. The place looked like a cave. It was completely dark, but she saw them in a corner. That woman was sitting on the floor, her arms and legs wrapped around the poor boy, while he fought to break free. His mom ran towards him, but by the time she picked him up in her arms, there was no one else there. As if that woman had only been an illusion in the darkness. She ran downstairs with her son in her arms. She hadn't carried him like that in years, but on that day she did, as if he were a baby again. From her floor, she watched the police go upstairs. As strange a sight as what she had just witnessed, the police daring to go inside that building, followed by some paramedics. She didn't want to see them bring the cannibal down, but they did. And the legends told about that man, including the fact that his empty apartment reeked of rotten meat, spread all over downtown. People started saying that the old man would lurk nearby, that they saw him under the street lamps, staring hatefully towards the building. The only thing that is certain is that the cannibal did not survive that night. Only on one other occasion was there an attempt to rent out that apartment, but no one managed to get rid of that stench of decay. The owner eventually gave up and boarded it up, so that at least the smell wouldn't invade the entire floor. But that has not stopped the stories, which are still being told today.
Do you remember when they said that woman in red went all the way up there? When a neighbor claimed she felt a chill and saw a woman in a red dress walking slowly to the cannibal's door? They say that night she opened it, the cannibal's door. The stench would then come and go, but if you smelled it, it was better to stay behind closed doors. It was better to lock yourself in the bedroom. On that floor, they may not have had old mirrors to cover every night, but I believe this was worse, since they had no idea how to protect themselves from these strange things, which happened when you least expected them to. When the stench arrived, there was nothing to be done except hide. During that time, a young Cuban man arrived. They said he was a Santero, that he seemed to be the only one on that floor who wasn't frightened by what dwelled there. He would walk around at all hours without a worry. He didn't hide from the stench, from what came with it. He invited people to stop being afraid. But not being afraid in this place is the worst thing you can do.
One night, he had some clients over. When he walked them to the stairs after finishing up, he noticed how dark the stairwell was, so he told them to walk down carefully. He returned to his apartment to perform his nightly ritual before bed. Someone knocked on the door very softly. He opened it, thinking the clients had forgotten something, but there was no one at the door. He leaned out and noticed that the door to the stairs was closing. He wasn't easily frightened, and it wasn't the first time something had manifested itself to him. But he felt a presence nearby. He could hear distant knocking and doors slamming, then his candles blew out. The stench that had suddenly arrived wasn't going to scare him. With complete confidence, he walked towards the stairs and noticed someone standing, about 7 or 8 steps below. The figure was wearing a dress to the floor, with very wide shoulder pads. He finally realized he was in grave danger. The figure did not move, but he clearly heard something climbing the stairs towards him. He barely managed to make it back to his apartment, footsteps right on his heels, and closed the door behind him. The whole time, that thing in the black dress watched him from the stairwell, motionless. He moved out not long after. He had recognized the danger, a danger he had no protection from.
"Did you fall asleep already?"
my mom said as she got up from the bed. She walked to the window. Outside, the storm was getting worse.
"That plague comes and goes,"
she said.
"But it's still up there. Listen to your father, and never, ever go up to the 5th floor. Now, it's time to sleep."
I miss my mom very much, every day. And I miss those last moments by her side. Even though she was different then. We had created a little tradition. Every night, 13 minutes before midnight, she would tell me ghost stories. Very few times I managed to stay awake before she finished. My mom used to say, and at that time, I thought it was just her way of setting the mood before the story, that these weren't just nighttime stories. "No," she said, "it was important that I never forget those stories. Because they were going to protect me." Almost all of them were stories that had happened in our building, so sooner or later, she assured me I was going to encounter the beings that inhabited those stories. Our story time was approaching, but it was already different that night. They had started scaring me more and more each time. I shut my eyes tighter every night, making a bigger effort for her to believe I was asleep, so I wouldn't have to see her. The door opened. I heard her slowly approaching, with great difficulty, as if she was dragging her legs. Her breathing was heavy. She seemed less and less like my mom each time. She touched me. Her hand was cold and extremely thin. Then, she told me the following story.
"Are you awake, son? You're scared to open your eyes, aren't you? Don't feel guilty. It's normal to be afraid. Maybe it's better this way. I'd rather you not see what I've become, what I'm turning into. I'm going to tell you one more story. Do you remember the first time you saw the woman in the red dress? It was when your dad had that accident at work, when we went to see him at the hospital, and they told us he had to stay overnight under observation. You and I took a bus that brought us back downtown, to a dark street. And from there we had to walk. You were very brave because I wouldn't stop crying from the nerves. And you told me that you were going to take care of me. We walked through those streets full of strange people. And when we got to the corner, you looked up. That's when you told me that there was a woman in your uncle's window, right in the corner apartment on the third floor. I thought you were mistaken, but when I looked up, I saw her too. It was very strange since your uncle was working his taxi at those hours, and he had been alone for years. We entered our apartment and I left you in bed, just like you are now. And then I went down to see who was at your uncle's place. I knocked on the door. It was quiet. So I knocked again, insistent. The lady across the hall opened her door and told me there was no one there, that your uncle was working. Behind that lady, I could see that mirror that the apartments on that floor had in common. It was covered, as everyone kept it. The ladies even had a thick tarp over it with two ropes holding it in place. I told her I knew he wasn't there, but that we had seen a woman leaning out the window. The lady smiled. She told me stranger things had been seen on that floor. But when I mentioned the woman was in a red dress, the lady slammed the door in my face without saying a word. That's when, I swear, I heard your uncle's door unlock. Of course, I didn't dare go in, or even knock again. I never told you why your aunt left, right? Though I'm sure you found out. Your aunt and uncle didn't believe in that business of covering the mirrors, and they spent years making fun of their neighbors' superstitions. Then one day, your aunt started feeling sick. She said that when she got up at night to go to the bathroom or get water and walked past the mirror, she said her reflection would do different things, that it walked in a strange way. When she stopped, the reflection would do so seconds later. Every time, her reflection in the mirror looked like it was leaning out, getting closer, as if that mirror were a door and it was looking for a way to get out. They started giving your aunt medication, but it never solved anything. One day, your uncle came home in the morning after working all night and your aunt was gone. She never came back. Your uncle looked for her for days, for weeks, but he never heard from her again. One dawn, after crying all night, your poor uncle heard someone walking around the living room. He thought his wife had finally come back. He quickly got up and opened the bedroom door. He managed to see your aunt for a moment, in the mirror, just a reflection, sitting in the empty living room in front of him. But there was nobody in the room. When he looked closer, he realized it wasn't your aunt in the reflection either. He covered the mirror that day and never uncovered it again. time went by and he told us he could hear her, that she talked to him from that covered mirror, that she asked him to let her out, that she didn't want to be there anymore, that it was dark. We started worrying about him. We thought he had gone crazy. Until your dad also heard her. One night, when they had been out drinking, your dad helped your uncle to bed after he passed out. He took off his shoes and got him in bed. When he was about to leave that apartment, someone, something, knocked from inside that mirror. Your dad left immediately. Over several months, your uncle recovered. He started working. He even quit the vices he had picked up from driving the taxi late at night. So he started working mornings. He matured, became a better person. You will probably remember more of this next part. Those last weeks when the neighbors started saying they could hear him arguing with a woman until late at night, even though there was no one with him. The neighbors and your dad realized that he had uncovered the mirror and now had it in his bedroom, next to his bed, as if he wanted to look at his reflection all the time, or inside it. His death was never explained. The police said it was surely him who left the gas valves open, but that's something we can't know for sure. These are horrible things I'm telling you, son. I know. But it's for your own good. You know that. Even if you're scared to look at me.
My mom interrupted the story. I felt her get close to me, her breath on my cheek. I shut my eyes tighter. Then she continued with her story.
I understand why your dad is bothered by you seeing me. Visiting you at these hours is all I have left. Forgive me. I know you've seen that woman in the red dress in the hallway, approaching the door, that you hear her touch the walls at night, lurking around. Fear her, and take good care of yourself, son. Take care, because I won't always be able to do it. There's still the most important story left to tell you.
She told me, but that was the last time my mother told me a story. She came by a few more nights, but nothing she said made any sense anymore. She was incoherent, and my dad confirmed that everything she had shared with me was also the motive behind her illness. I miss her so much, and I regret not having had the courage to look at her in the last stage of her illness when she barely weighed 40 kilos, when she lost all her hair, when she was no longer the mom I wanted to remember. My mom told me it was better that way. That I listen to her, but not look at her. That I never remember her like that. That when she came by, I should close my eyes, shut them tight. Even if at some point she asked me to look at her one last time. My mom always believed in ghosts, but those last stories went beyond the supernatural. They seemed to come from a fantasy world created in her head. And I don't know. Except for that time when I knew I saw the woman in red in my uncle's window, and that time I saw her through the peephole. I remembered most things very different from how my mom told them to me every night. I never understood how much I would miss her until she died, until that illness took her away, until I knew she would never sneak into my room again to tell me a ghost story. I missed her, but at the same time, when she was gone, when she stopped telling me stories, I stopped being afraid. I found out there were some kids my age living on the first floor, that not everyone in the building was bad or strange, that many other stories were told about the cannibal. When I came home after school, I realized that there was a dog who was always barking, probably hating being left alone on the second floor. How much of all that was the truth and how much of it were just blurry memories mixed with the desire to believe in the stories my mom left me. On one occasion, when I arrived home from school, I was approached by a much older neighbor. She asked me to accompany her to buy some things and told me she would give me a tip if I helped her. I didn't have any homework, so I agreed, and I accompanied her to different stores downtown. where we found everything on our list. We finished close to 9 o'clock at night. I wanted to return home as soon as possible, since I hadn't told my dad I would be going out. The building looked darker without my mother in it, knowing she wasn't up there in her bed. When the lady and I began to climb the stairs, a desperate, sad howl from that dog on the second floor surprised us. The lady stopped me by the arm. She didn't let me pass in front of the hallway door on that level.
"That already sounded very close," she told me.
"It's that poor dog they always leave alone," I said.
"Son, there is no dog here,"
the lady replied, very seriously. After a moment, we decided to move forward, and as if by reflex, we both looked through the foggy window of that hallway. Nothing strange to see on the other side. I got scared that night, but it wasn't enough to start believing, or for me to start remembering. My dad started looking for a place to move to, but we couldn't afford more than what we were paying there. It was unbearable for him to stay in that apartment, in the same bed where my mother spent her last days, in the bed where she died. I entered sixth grade. By then I had decided that whether ghosts existed or not, that I would no longer live in fear. That was over, no more fear. And every night I remembered my mom, every night at that time. The sadness also became unbearable for me, so I had to change my routine, fall asleep before 10 o'clock so it wouldn't be so painful. And one time, when I spoke to her out loud, before falling asleep, as if she were there, I told her how grateful I was, how much I missed her. I told her I was no longer afraid. And that night, I fell asleep just like that, while I spoke to her, while I remembered her. And for some reason, I woke up close to midnight. I looked at the clock. It was 15 minutes before. And I remembered when that hour terrified me because I knew what was coming, because I didn't want to see her like that. Sick. I remembered how I would squeeze my eyes shut. I saw when the clock next to my bed changed. 13 minutes before midnight. I heard the door. Not the bedroom door, the closet door. Someone walked to my bed, sat down. That was not my mom. That was nothing like my mom. I could feel it. I squeezed my eyes shut. I had the covers up to my face and felt how they started pulling the blanket off me. Little by little, as if trying to avoid waking me up, I was about to open my eyes, to look in the reflection of the window, to see what was sitting on the bed, whose breathing I could feel, whose smell was so unbearable. I felt I would vomit at any moment, which would reveal that I wasn't asleep. Whatever was there knew I was awake, and it shushed me like when you want to put a child to sleep. In the distance, I heard the apartment door open. I heard my dad's voice saying goodnight, and I yelled for him to come. To come inside, please. He came running in, startled, trying to calm me down, and I told him there was someone there, that there was something in the room with us. He hugged me until I calmed down. He wouldn't stop repeating that it was all because of my mom, that he understood how much I missed her, but that I had to let her go. We moved into a room in a nearby tenement for 3 months. It was even worse than our old building, but after that, we finally got a small house on the outskirts of the city. My dad didn't care about commuting 2 hours to work to that job that used to be right around the corner from home. He just wanted me not to suffer from the same things my mother suffered from everything that overwhelmed her mind, from everything that didn't exist. Now I'm older, and my dad is quite ill. When he found out about a year ago, his distant attitude towards me changed. Everything I had managed to overcome, everything I identified as traumatic childhood memories returned. It confused me when he started telling me about what he saw in my uncle's mirror. When he told me about the howls of that animal. When he told me about the woman in red, and even other stories that I didn't remember my mom sharing with me, he started talking to me as if it were all real. There's even something he told me recently in the most honest conversation we've ever had. As if saying goodbye, he told me about that night when he arrived and entered the room to help me. He said there was something else in the room. He said that when he entered, he caught a glimpse of something going into the closet, something he had never seen before, different from all the other legends that inhabited that place. It was a woman that was just bones with a rotten skin. He says that while he hugged me, he couldn't help but notice her, even though his gaze was fixed on me. That woman didn't disappear. She simply entered the darkness of the closet and remained there, watching us, knowing my dad could see her. At one point, for a second, my father dared to look up. At first, he had thought the woman was smiling, but no. That woman had no skin on the lower part of her face, exposing her teeth. And I know my dad might also be sick, like my mother. And I don't mean that damned cancer, but rather that thing that made my mom see everything that no one wants to see, that no one wants to know exists. Maybe insanity is a curse on the whole family, or on anyone who dares set foot in that building on 10th Street.